CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning, this is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, CJSF.ca. Streaming worldwide. Today on Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, we have a special guest. We have Vanessa Goodman, who is a Toronto, Vancouver, Canada, an icon in the choreography world. And she has got a wonderful new project that's happening under the sponsorship of programs by Music on Main. And so, welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your new project has got a long name. It says that it's entrancing meditation on the cyclical nature of embodied memory. Could you break that down? What does that mean?
Yes, great question. So Caroline Shaw and myself co-created this work, and I'm a movement artist, and Caroline is a composer and an incredible also musician. And we partnered together to co-create this work based around the idea that as something decomposes, it regenerates and turns into something new, so that there's this constant idea of cycle involved. And both of us were really interested in repetition in our practice, and this kind of led us to this idea of, you know, cycles in terms of organic material, in terms of the material that we use to make the piece, with old technology and new technology, how it breaks down over time, our own bodies, our living archive, our gardens that we get to enjoy in springtime, and then how, you know, something, how fall comes about and things start to decompose. And from that decomposition, new things grow. So we were just thinking about all the materials that it takes to create a piece, that being our living archive, the archive of the materials. And it led us to Graveyards and Gardens.
Now, Graveyards and Gardens, that's a fascinating title. In doing that, how long did it take to put together a composition like that?
Fabulous question. Well, Caroline and I actually started creating this piece together. We had our first workshop for it back in 2019, I think, or 2018. Maybe it was 2018. It was in the spring. And it was 2019. Sorry, pardon me. Because then we, right after that, in the fall of 2019, we went to the Banff Center. And we're in residence there for 2 weeks and worked on it. And then following that, we had another really wonderful residency at Lenya on Galliano Island on the West Coast. And then the pandemic happened and we had to move online. And then Caroline and I met almost every single week, once a week online to share ideas, exchange content, share audio clips, video clips, until we arrived at the piece that we premiered in January 2021, which sadly wasn't the intended premiere of how the work was supposed to be perceived, because Caroline wasn't allowed to cross the border to come perform the work live with me. So I had to perform it by myself live, but Caroline was in the room with me, of course, through audio, and her voice is animated and omnidirectional, speakers in the space. So we perform the work in the round, and the sound moves from small objects to the space swirling with sound, moving circularly. It's quite choreographed how the sound moves through the space. It took a number of years. So we started, I guess, in the spring of 2019, and we didn't get to perform it together until last April, so spring of 2022.
Wow, it's almost 6 years.
Yeah. So
in doing a work like that, do you bring in other technicians, like working with the steel or working with other things that are in the assembly?
Of course. The people that we work with are huge collaborators on the project. James Proudfoot designed the lights for the production, and we use localized fixtures that are lamps, like household lamps. The lamps dance, and they also sing throughout the production. And then we also work with two fabulous audio designers, Kate DeLorme and Eric Chad, who took the stems from Caroline's compositions and were able to choreograph the movement of sound through space exactly the way that Caroline and I had dreamed it, and in fact, even more fantastically, because we told them our idea and how we wanted the sound to go from one tiny little speaker inside a tape deck to all of a sudden fill the whole room or jet across the room to one specific other speaker, and they were able to do that with their incredible skills.
I don't think people appreciate that when you talk about a workshop, a lot of times you picture just people sitting down, but in your workshops, that was hours of collaborating
yes.
with other people.
Oh, yeah, completely. And without, we've had a lot of support along the way from organizations who have made those workshops possible, like Simon Fraser University gave us a week in residency, BAMP Center that I mentioned, Lenya, the Dance Center, Scotiabank Dance Center, and even MPAC and Troy, New York was supposed to give us, almost 3 weeks in residency before a premiere, but the pandemic happened, and then they moved into being a co-commissioning partner with Music on Main.
You mentioned residencies a few times. What, for people who may not know, what actually is involved in the residency?
Yeah, well, each residency is unique. Some places you go, it's usually a place where you go and you have a concentrated period where you've got designated studio space and resources. Maybe they're not financial. Sometimes they're financial, but sometimes the resources are like there's a technician there to help you, or other times it's just a space where you can work. Or sometimes it's also a space that you can work and there's space that houses you. And you go and you just have a concentrated time where you're working on something. And like the BAMP Center, for example, is an incredible facility in Alberta. And when you go there, they feed you, they provide you with all the technology that you need. There's specialists to help you. There's people who work with documentation to document what you're doing. There's different spaces for you to work, whether it's recording or in studio or on a stage. There's all these different kind of facilities to support the creation of a work. So a residency is really kind of like, I would say, a concentrated period where you move into having the opportunity to work with either yourself or collaborators and your material that really focuses in on that time, and where you can kind of get rid of the distractions of the rest of your life, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
That sounds like a great thing. Get rid of the distractions in your life. April 12th through the 15th at Simon Fraser University, you're going to be presenting this work. Will there be previews on the campus, or how do people get involved in attending?
Yes, there's tickets available online through Music on Main's website, and we'll be performing it four times. It is in the round, and so tickets, instead of it being its regular, I think it's a 300 proscenium seat theater or 400 proscenium theater, the audience size will be much smaller and much more intimate for this environment because it is in the round. Tickets are available online, and there's also footage available at graveyardsandgardens.com if you're curious what the work looks like, if you want to peruse it. take a peek. Of course, we don't have footage yet of Caroline and I performing together in the full production, but we will have that after this next performance. We're having an incredible videographer, David Cooper, come home to work for us during our dress rehearsal.
Oh, wow. So the videos will be something available. Will people be able to buy videos of the performance?
No, it won't be available like it was during kind of the pandemic with streaming. We did do a live stream of the production then, and there was a video that was very much supported and produced to share as a piece. But we want this to be in the essence of the live again. So there'll be a trailer. There'll be a 30 to 1 minute a clip of it online, but it won't be like 30 seconds to 1 minute clip, but there won't be an extended version online of this version. Not at this time.
Can you tell us a bit more about Music on Main, how you see it bringing opportunities for choreographers and musicians?
Well, David Pei, who's the incredible person who runs Music on Main with his amazing team, is actually the person who introduced Caroline Shaw and myself. He put us on an artist blind date, and that was in 2015, and I am so grateful. David has this incredible ability to cultivate relationships, support artists, and bring people together to enjoy sound, some more kind of traditional, and then other things that are definitely more experimental. So Music on Main does an incredible job of bringing in artists that have a rich history in either kind of the more traditional approach to the more avant-garde approach.
So it seems like it'll broaden people's notion of what music is about, and is also performance art. How long have you been involved in performance art?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think the first time I professionally performed when I was about maybe 14 or 15, and I'm 40 now.
Wow.
But I think the first dances that I made, I was probably 9 years old.
Mm-hmm. And what about, they always show parents of piano players and the child is there hours and hours playing. What was your routine for dancing, both for just basic skills and then making your own productions?
I had a lot of amazing, inspiring teachers. And when I talk about the work being a living archive, I feel like every person I've ever studied with, I've ever danced with, I've ever had an exchange with, taken a class, lives in the work. So for me, I definitely, my first encounters was with tap. I was really inspired by Fred Astaire, the Nicholas Brothers, Gregory Hines, Gene Kelly. And that's kind of what got me curious. And my teachers when I was young, when I was about 9 years old, really encouraged me to experiment and even start choreographing. So I think for me, those kind of like early exchanges fed into it. And then I had the fortune of going to an arts high school in Toronto and had really amazing teachers there. And then I went to Simon Fraser University. And while I was at university, I actually didn't want to choreograph at all. And it wasn't until I graduated, and there's several years after, they were opening Woodward's building, and Rob Kitsos and Judith Gary asked me to choreograph a very short 4-minute piece with some of the students for the opening ceremony. And it was then that I realized that I really loved to make work on other people. And that's when I really started to choreograph professionally.
Wow. Shout out to CJ. CJSF is part of Simon Fraser, so it's wonderful to hear people's stories of how it influenced their lives in different ways. We've talked about the importance of mentors. Do you formally mentor any students?
I have some younger artists that definitely work with my company, and there is some mentorship, but I also feel like with younger artists, they're mentoring me as well, because I feel like, it's always an exchange. I learn so much from the people that I work with. But I do spend quite a bit of time, trying to help the people that in the community that I can, in terms of whether it's through apprenticeships or helping people with grants or helping people with budgets, all the things that it takes to be an artist, a working artist. I get a lot of budget questions from other young artists that come to me before they submit their grants, wanting to know exactly how to structure their budget. So I do spend quite a bit of time doing that. And then I do teach at, I have taught at SFU. I taught a choreographic lab in the summer session last year. And then I teach also at Modus Operandi, which is a professional training program, from time to time, and Lemon Dance. So there is different ways, and I teach at TSB as well in Vancouver. So I think, through all these different things, I think, I have been mentored by people, and maybe bits of information that I've shared with them have supported them in their career.
It's kind of like the cycle you were talking about with a plant, where it goes from one form to the other. Even with it's dead, it's fertilizing something else.
Totally.
And even to acknowledge that you're learning from your students. It's not just one way where people are coming and you're expecting them to pattern themselves after you.
No, it's definitely reciprocal. I feel like there's an exchange.
In this exchange, right now, how do you feel that, coming back to do work in Vancouver, how do you think that has enabled you to broaden your audience, or even broaden how people see choreography?
I think Vancouver, has an incredible community, in fact, and it's a very, diverse community in terms of how it approaches movement practices. We're very lucky to have such a vibrant city in terms of its cultural work. And I think that, it has so many points of intersections with other mediums also, that we're quite fortunate. And also, I think having the dance center and SFU Woodward's downtown is a big part of the community's incredible capacity to hold so many voices and to uplift so many voices. I feel like, we're in a quite unique position on the West Coast, where when I first moved over here in 2000, I think in one, it was a bit more isolated, but it feels like we've really grown in the last 20 years. And I know also, though, in the 70s and in the early 80s, Vancouver was a real hotbed with Edom and with experimental work. So I think Vancouver's always had kind of this rich history of not being afraid of trying something new and kind of thinking outside of maybe even the traditional proscenium in its broader community, which is a real gift.
Yes, and it's enabled people to who wouldn't ordinarily go out to a musical or go out to a choreography to come out because of that way that you mentioned intersections with other things. It's mentioned that your work induces meditation. Are there people who are practitioners of meditation who talk to you or give you feedback about the show?
No, I think the meditation side probably comes more from Caroline's practice, if I had to guess. I think for her, she thinks of sound in a very incredible structured journey. And I would say the sound arc and the sound story takes you on this really incredible journey. But I think also, there is a meditative state to listening. And I think that part of the production and part of the show is tuning how we listen to things. So I feel like that's maybe where the meditative part of it comes, as opposed to maybe a structured meditation that is maybe something people who might anticipate a meditation being guided on a guided meditation. It's not quite like that. It's more about tuning how we listen and moving on that journey together.
That's interesting, because now there's a lot of encouragement for people to listen to each other, you know, not yell at each other, but listen. So that's a good observation of what you are not guiding people to do, but observing happening as they're getting in, you know, involved with the show. What about the interactions that you've had with other musicians, like as working with Beyoncé on her work? What was that like?
Oh, well, so that's Caroline. That's not me.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So I can't answer that question. Caroline's resume is she's an incredibly accomplished artist, from winning 3 Grammys to the Pulitzer Prize. And, you know, she's collaborated with so many people, as you've mentioned. But I can't speak to her experiences, but I can speak to collaborating with Caroline and her being a remarkably generous, collaborator who leaves tons of room for conversation, discourse, and exchange. She has this incredible power to inspire artistic excellence. So I feel really lucky to have crossed paths with her, because she has pushed me as an artist.
Mm. A lot of times people say someone pushed them. What does that mean? What does it feel like, you know, mm-hmm. to be pushed?
I think it's like a gentle push, and it comes from Caroline. But I moved outside of my comfort zones while working with her, and it expanded my practice into a way that I had never anticipated I would move into. She opened up, she cracked something open in me that can never be closed, in a really good way.
That's good. Yeah, in a really good way, she cracked something open, because there are people that work with people and they're cracking, you know, breaks them or breaks their spirit. But the way that
you... No. It's like a joy she cracked open in me, I would say.
Let us tell people again about the show and when it's happening.
It's happening April 12th through 15th at SFU Woodward's, and it's a co-presentation with Music on Main and SFU Woodward's cultural programming.
And during the day, are there any opportunities that you know of that you'll be working with students or available to students?
Unfortunately, we did discuss this, but unfortunately, because of the timeline and exams, mm-hmm. because it's right in that week, it wasn't going to be an opportune moment to connect with the student body this time around.
Okay, so people will just have to make it their business to get there between yeah. the 12th and the 15th. What time of evening is it?
I believe the show is at 7:30, but I should just double check as I'm saying that. I will just give you 7:30 p.m. There you go.
Could you tell me what is the most, of all the different things that you've done within music, what are you most passionate about?
I think, because I'm a movement artist, sound is such a huge part of how I make things. And it's such a huge part of physiologically how I experience the world. You know, I think of sound, I think of our little ear hairs dancing or being affected. And I learned that from Brady Marks, who is an incredible sound artist, who's also based locally. And I've gotten to collaborate with Brady. I've gotten to collaborate with Lossel, who's also a graduate of SFU. I've gotten to work with Caroline. You know, all of these people have fed my practice in such beautiful ways. And I couldn't zero in on one moment, but I would say that having live sound is something that I cherish, and that it really fuels my practice in a profound way.
I know, after being closed up and having to do all kinds of musical performances by Zoom, some restaurants and venues have live music or live performances, and, you know, the people standing outside waiting to get in. So I think there is a real hunger and appreciation for live music.
And totally. I think so too, yeah.
Some musicians have particular causes that they are associated or affiliated with. Do you have any causes?
Well, I would like to just say, you know, I really believe in like, you know, what the Portland Hotel Society does and the Downtown East Side. And I also really believe in safe supply and all of these things I think really need to happen in our community quite urgently. And I also think there's a real need for more housing and for low income. And I think that's what makes a great city is when people can stay and feel safe. And these are really key ingredients that I'd love to see supported throughout our community.
Yeah, Downtown Eastside has helped many performers, singers, dancers who don't otherwise get a chance to put together their package through their showcase program. So I think you're support of that, just verbally mentioning those things like safe supply. People who don't understand safe supply, could you say a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, safe supply is being able to access a safe drug supply. So decriminalizing the use of opioids, for example, and having, safe drugs. And for people to be able to use them without knowing or with knowing that they are clean and they do not have fentanyl in it. And this would dramatically reduce the fentanyl crisis and also the amount of deaths we have in our community annually. So I think that's one of the biggest issues in our city right now is access to safe, clean drugs.
Yes.
We're losing way too many people.
there's a musical break for us. A segue. We usually, when we're interviewing someone, select some things or some parts of their work to play. If there is any particular thing that we could play, what would you suggest?
Of Caroline's work or from the show? Do you have something from the show?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Let me just take a look what you have access to. I think you have Tape Deck Duo.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say play Tape Deck Duo. That's a really fun piece, and it plays with the different technology that we're working with, which is old cassette tapes and tape players, and then also looping devices and the vocoders.
Yeah, that seems to be just some teenagers who are collecting, other people that are collecting these old players and then getting new music and sounds from it. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was visiting someone and there were all these CDs and DVDs and people said, oh, nobody uses those anymore. I said, no, they're musicians creating new sounds from it.
Yeah, so totally.
We can play some of that so people can hear it.
Great.
If you had, some of the musicians and people that I've interviewed, I've asked them if they have advice for younger people or suggestions on ways that they can break in. CJSF, for example, welcomes people to send their own music. It works to give people who don't have a budget for a producer, well, they have a producer, but they don't have a media kit. But what kind of encouragement can you give people on getting out there, networking, or just getting their work out and not feeling that there's no opportunity for them just because they don't have a big producer?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the same in the dance world as it is in the music world, but I would say from my experience, the biggest thing is building relationships. With the dance world, it's about building relationships with presenters, with community. So for me, it's not about the short-term gain. It's not about transactional experiences, but it's about building long-lasting relationships where you can go back to people and say, hey, I have a new work. Are you interested in taking a look at it? I'd love to share it with you. Are you interested in helping produce it? These kind of exchanges and relationships are really valuable and also really nurturing when they're long lasting, as opposed to, hey, can you buy my show?
Right.
and do it. And also learning about what people are doing, learning about what they're producing and how they're producing it and seeing if it's a good fit for you. And if it's not a good fit, that's okay too. But find out what people are doing. Ask lots of questions. I think, again, listening and asking a lot of questions is really valuable when it comes to having the opportunity to have exchanges with people that are long lasting.
And I think attending a show, staying behind, talking to people also helps.
Totally. Go see lots of work. See what inspires you. Reach out to artists that inspire you. You know, see if you can collaborate with them. Collaboration's been a really big thing for me in my practice. I've gotten to collaborate with some amazing artists, and those collaborations have taken the work to some amazing places. So, you know, if you're that type of person that likes to collaborate,